So this week, not only do I have one intro story for you, I have two. So we're going to have one of our fantastic choose your own adventure intro story weeks. Now, would you rather hear about a Xbox that's Willy Wonka themed with an edible controller, or a PC that's infused with human blood?
They're both great. I like the chocolate one though. I think that's funny.
How you feeling, Mume?
I do like sugar, so yes, chocolate would be
nice. We're going to start with the sweet one. This comes out of IGN, was written by Ryan Disdale. Microsoft has created what it's calling the first ever official edible controller to go alongside a Willy Wonka-inspired Xbox Series X. Revealed on the Xbox Wire, the latest in Xbox's weird and wacky gamepads takes inspiration from the upcoming Wonka film by giving fans the chance to win an Xbox of chocolates and other goodies. The edible gamepad doesn't actually work, of course, but it is an Xbox controller replica made entirely of chocolate. For those worried about how they control the giant chocolate bar themed console, the Xbox is packing an actual controller in the box too. This one comes in a burgundy color inspired by Wonka's coat. Mume, have you ever been playing some games and things? This is great and I'm enjoying how comfortable this controller is, but what if I could eat it?
Ooh, but the thing is that if you eat it, then how can you play the game then?
Oh, God, what a dilemma. You're absolutely right, man. What do you do?
At the same time, especially summer's coming around the corner now, so the sweets might start melting in your hand, and then not only that you don't have any chocolate to eat, but you have no games to play either.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. How about you, Aaron?
Yeah, I love this idea. I love that PlayStation and Xbox kind of get more creative. I think, like, recently we had that Turtles controller that, you know, smelt like pizza or whatever. Like, I kind of like them doing these weird, wacky kind of fun stuff. But, yeah, not practical in any way, shape, or form, right? Just a bit of a laugh.
I'd much rather this than those, like, controller jackets that... Someone was selling at some point. You could get a jacket for your Xbox controller. But the design of the console is really cool too. Like, it looks like a giant chocolate bar. The controller's that cool burgundy color. But look, all they're doing this for is obviously marketing, so that IGN can do an article promoting Willy Wonka's fucking film. But I don't care. If you're going to do marketing, this is the kind of shit I love. Keep it coming. Keep it coming. Well, like for the Marvels, they should have, done a Marvel-themed fucking Xbox. Why not? I want a Brie Larson-shaped Xbox. Let's go. That's not problematic at all.
Yeah, I'd love to see how they do the heating elements, the cooling, like the fan, all of that when it's shaped like an actual human being. But challenge accepted, eh?
Hello and welcome to News to Reviews, your place to be for gaming news stories and also your place to be for impressions on the latest games coming out each and every week. My name is Zach. I'm here with my co-host, Aaron. Lockie's still away, so we have Aaron filling in once again. Aaron, thanks so much for being here. How you doing?
Good, good, good. I hope it felt nice and natural saying your co-host, Aaron, because it feels natural on this side.
Lockie may never be coming back.
I love that.
Yeah, you're not mistaken. He's like, Lockie's replacement.
Oh, yes. And someone else vying to be Lockie's replacement. We have the wonderful and magnificent Mume joining us once again. Mume, how's it hanging?
I wasn't saying I was magnific, but I'm here, yes. Thank you for having me, as always.
I'm saying it, Mume. You don't have to say it because I will. I'm the wind beneath your wings. I'm your biggest fan. And I'm a big fan of you because you do awesome... Not only are you just an awesome person in general, a lovely dude, but you do fantastic photography on Instagram, and I'm guessing you probably post it wherever you can get it. Where can people check out all that wonderful stuff you do, Moo Man?
Well, most of the... Okay, so instead of doing the whole, like, giving me my name and online, I actually have... So recently I went to Brisbane Supernova, so I made something different for that. So I usually like to make cards to give to people when I take photos of them, because people like to collect cards, but obviously people don't like the whole premise of making cards, because you're kind of making like environmental stuff, but I still do it because people like collecting my cards. So anyways, way off track. All right. instead of actually mentioning my social stuff, I do have made up a link tree now. So that way it has everything in there. So pretty much all you got to do is look for my name on Linktree as, so if I actually know how to say the link. So linktree.ee/mumei101. So MUMEAI 101. That's where you'll find all my main social account stuff.
Oh, yes. And you best believe that Linktree will be in the description of the podcast. So everyone make sure you do get amongst that. And also down there in the description will be the link to our MoSpace over here at News to Reviews. We're raising money for Movember. Movember raises funds to go to research projects and whatnot that support testicular cancer, prostate cancer, and men's mental health. So any amount you can afford to donate is a massive help. The Mo's looking... Well, it doesn't look like a question mark yet. It looks so, so bad. It's absolutely horrific. And I'm just constantly embarrassed no matter where I am in public. So if you can, peeps, it'll make me feel amazing if you can donate. And if you can't afford to donate, if you can just share our MoSpace around, then that's also fantastic. That's also a massive help to us. But you know what else is a massive help? Gamer news. Helps us get through the week. There you go. That's a tenuous fucking segue if I've ever done one. I'm so tired. Just a heads up, by the way. I didn't go to bed till like fucking 1:30 last night. So I'm struggling today. But we're here, people, and we're going to talk about some gaming news. Should we get stuck into it?
Yeah.
Give me the fire it up. Give me the tea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So we potentially have another depression sandwich this week. So we're starting off with a happy story and then finishing off with a sort of happy story. We'll see how that one lands. We'll see what happens. But I'm really stoked about this story. It's great. And when we're hearing about all these fucking layoffs, it comes out of Kotaku. It was written by Levi Winslow. Developer publisher Atlus is reporting raising the annual salaries of its Japanese staff by 15%, a move that is the total opposite of what is happening across the US labor market and the games industry specifically for months now. According to a press release machine translated by a game developer, the Persona and Shin Megami Tensei creator will increase the base monthly, apparently, salary of new university graduates from 257,000 yen to 300,000 yen, which is around $2,000, alongside bumping the annual salaries of all employees by 15% in April 2024. Apparently, the move was made to make the company more attractive and competitive for global talent, as well as retaining current staff in the hopes of expanding its operations to create a workspace where employees can perform to the best of their ability through stable income. Moomay, a game company, is doing something good for their workers?
That can't be.
Madness.
That can't be, right?
What's going on?
Yeah, that is madness.
What's happening here?
What is happening? Also, yes. Well, good on to Atlus for actually helping people, giving more money to developers and such. And, like, Atlus is pretty good. My best bet is because of all the Persona games they've been releasing recently, so that would be my good guess of why they're getting some good annual salary stuff. And
they're making bank!
They're making bank! And they would be making more bank next when Persona 3 comes out.
Oh, they're doing, like, another remaster or
they're remaking the third game, so yeah. So they apparently, what I've seen, it looks like they're doing a Persona 3 game running in the P5 engine, because it looks similar to that. So that's what my, P5's engine's pretty good.
Yeah, nice. Oh, Aaron, does this light up your morning?
Certainly does. Like, all we hear about, you know, when you turn on the news at 6 o'clock here in Sydney is just, you know, all the bad that's happening out in the world, and you just think about it and you're like, oh god, can they just give us a nice bright story? And it's great that in the gaming space you do have a nice bright story such as this one to kind of make you you know, reinstill your trust and your happiness and everything that you love about the gaming industry. So good stuff for Atlas.
Oh, I fucking love it. It's funny that, like, 'cause the last time I heard one of these cool kinds of stories, it was also out of Japan where the heads of Nintendo took a pay cut when Nintendo wasn't doing so hot. I think this needs to be replicated across the industry, these kinds of practices. It's just nice to hear that the people who are actually doing the work are getting rewarded for that. Thank fuck, like, what a crazy system. You know what? These workers are going to be more satisfied. Their home lives are going to be better. And I almost guarantee you they're going to be more productive. Unlike these other poor workers working for these massive Western companies where, you know, they go in and just that day people around them are losing jobs. It's fucking wild. So yeah, it's so nice to get a story like this in the midst of the fucking thousands of layoffs that there've been over this year. And oh, speaking of those layoffs, it's the depressing time.
That's depression.
Amazon has laid off 180 staff from their gaming division. Oh, dearie me. A statement by the Amazon Games VP, Christoph Hartmann, or as you call him, Christoph Heartless Man. Yep. After our initial restructuring in April, it became clear that we need to focus our resources even more on the areas that are growing with the highest potential to drive our business forward. As such, the leadership team and I have made the difficult decision to close two of our initiatives, Crown Channel and Game Growth. We are also refocusing our efforts for Prime Gaming. We've listened to our customers and we know delivering free games every month is what they want most. So we are refining our Prime benefit to increase our focus here, there. With these changes in our approach come changes to our resourcing, resulting in the elimination of just over 180 roles. Now, Amazon, this is not their first round of firings for the year, so just generally at Amazon, not in the gaming sphere, they fired 18,000 people in January. 18,000. Think about that. It's wild. And then just a few months later in March, fired another 9,000 people, which is just, it's absolutely insanity to me. 27,000 people in the span of 3 months. How are you building your company up to a point where there's that much just dead weight that you can cut away? I just don't fucking believe it. These fucking fools running these companies. Amazon made $225 billion in profit last year. So think about that. They've fired 27,000 people and then another 180 this week, and they made $225 billion worth of profit last year, presumably with all of these people still working there. So, holy fucking shit, Aaron, Amazon ruining lives. What are your thoughts here?
I love that punch in the face there, Zach. That's great. Oh, well, not great in regards to what's actually happening, but the way that you worded it. Yeah, no, I hate this. Like, clearly, it's a shit story. You know, I don't understand why these big tech companies are still investing so hard into cloud gaming. Like, you know, Microsoft was a big tech company, that got into gaming in 2001, but there was no cloud gaming at that time. So they went with the traditional console and they lasted the test of time. But, you know, like Google Stadia, what happened to that? Like, it was cloud gaming and it just died. And Google's, what, number 3 in the world when it comes to the most profitable companies? Like, yeah. If you're working for Amazon right now and you're in the gaming space at Amazon, I'd be very worried, like, about what's going to happen moving forward, especially with this news and especially after seeing Stadia go down. It's just horrible. It's a bad place to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Not wrong at all. How you feel about it, Mume?
Pretty much like every other people who talk about the news. It's just awful. What can you say? It's always the big techs. They're always like, yeah, we can make so much money, but we need to get rid of everyone we don't need anymore. So it's pretty awful. I don't know what to add to that, really.
Yeah, what can you say? I think...
What can I say, yeah?
I think the thing that just really irks me about this is they just made an obscene amount of money last year. And we're, like, keep in mind, I wasn't talking about revenue. They didn't make $225 billion revenue. They made $225 billion with a B in profit. Yet that wasn't enough. They had to fire all of these people because $225 billion is not enough. They need to make more. It's just madness to me. And not to mention, these 180 people that they're fucking firing, they're doing it so they can give away free games through Prime Gaming. That's the statement from their own VP. They're saying that they've listened to customers. Now, if you say to customers, hey guys, what do you want, free games, or would you rather this 180 people get to keep their jobs and their livelihoods? I think customers are going to, if they have any sense of morality whatsoever, are going to be like, yeah, I'd rather those people keep their jobs. We don't get that option. We just get the option that they think is going to make them the most fucking money possible. It's absolutely fucking disturbing. We entrust so much of our lives to these fucking tech giants, and they just have so much unchecked power, and they have so much information about us as well too. They know fucking everything about us, and we can't rely on them to look after their own fucking people that work at their own company. How are we supposed to rely on them to be a good business for us as well? Ah, it sucks. It makes me want to cancel my Amazon Prime. Fuck me, I'm watching Invincible right now, and fuck, I'm part of the problem. I really am. I'm part of the problem.
You can always you can always stream it legally. I didn't hear that. I didn't say that.
I'll never do that or recommend it to anyone. Though, is it morally wrong?
No.
I'll leave you peeps to decide.
Questionable. Questionable.
Just fuck, Jeff Bezos is so obscenely rich. Like, dude, sell one of your mega yachts and let this 180 staff keep their job. Like, it's just, how does someone like that go to sleep at night knowing the effect that they have on people? I don't know. Like, I guess everyone's the hero of their own story. He probably thinks in some ways that he's, you know, oh, I provided them all a job in the first place. They're lucky.
I would like to quickly mention this, that I do watch a YouTuber from time to time called Lewis Rosman. Have you heard of him? So he's a YouTuber that always likes to talk shit about, like, Google and Apple, especially Apple. He loves to give shit to Apple because of how their practices mm-hmm. are. But he made a video recently about that. His wife would want to watch a movie on, not a movie, like a series on Netflix. So obviously, he's not a guy who likes to give money unless they earn it in a way. It's like they deserve the content. Like if you make good content, they will support you. So mm-hmm. he did it for his wife to go watch a TV series on there. I can't remember what he mentioned, but he was showing me that he has like a 4K smart TV, and apparently he paid for like the premium edition, so you can watch it mm-hmm. in 4K and all kind of stuff. So when he was watching it, he looked at him like, huh, this resolution looks very, very low. It doesn't look 4K to him. So he managed to, like, look it up online somewhere, like, through the TV and all that by programming, you know, like, he can hack through it. And he was mentioning that, oh, yeah, so I'm paying extra money I'm paying to watch in 4K, but you're giving me a 720 resolution stream? So he paid extra for not getting what he's getting. What he paid for. So apparently he was talking about you can literally watch a piracy version of that series at 1080, and it actually is in 1080. But when you watch it officially on Netflix, they give you a shittier version.
It's like fucking Nintendo with their Nintendo Vault, you know. They have so many titles that people fucking love and people want to get their hands on, but they will release just one version on one console that they're going to stop supporting in 5 or 6 years' time. So if you want to play any of these old games, if you haven't got these old consoles, you're fucked. And even if you do, sometimes Nintendo will sell you like a worse version back or something like that, and it's just not worth it. And in those cases, it's almost like they're begging us to go the not quite as legal route. Though I will never recommend anyone ever do that. Naughty, naughty, naughty. And no, someone else that's been naughty, CEO David Zaslav over at fucking Warner Brothers Games. Oh, this article comes out of Eurogamer. It was written by Matt Wales. As part of its latest earnings call, Warner Brothers CEO David Zaslav has outlined the company's plan to transform its biggest gaming franchises from traditional console and PC releases into always-on live-service games. Zaslav made the comments during his opening remarks to investors, in which referred to several of the company's franchises, Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, Batman, and Mortal Kombat, as $1 billion gaming properties. Developer NetherRealm's Mortal Kombat 1, he noted, has sold nearly 3 million copies since launching in mid-September this year. Our focus, he continued, is on transforming our biggest franchise from largely console and PC-based with 3 to 4 year release schedules to include more always-on gameplay through live services, multi-platform and free-to-play extensions, with the goal to have more players spending more time on more platforms. Ultimately, we want to drive engagement and monetization of longer cycles and at higher levels, he continued. We are currently under scale and see significant opportunity to generate greater post-purchase revenue. Oh, and then as reported by WCCF Tech, Monolith of Middle-earth Shadow of Mordor fame is currently looking for a lead software engineer of gameplay on Wonder Woman and wants the candidate to have experience in helping maintain a live software product or game. Moomay, Warner Brothers is throwing their weight behind live service gaming. How do you feel about this?
It won't last long. Think about it. A lot of live services games that came out like within a year or two, they just died quickly because no one wants to, because there's too many games at the moment that people can't keep track of. So many games of like, oh, I gotta do this, I gotta do this on this game, I gotta do this game. Like, there's so many games happening right now, and a lot of them are dying. Like, no offense to the people who put time and effort into making those games. And it's just, yeah, it is. It's not gonna last, because like Warner Brothers, obviously the big corporations, they only care about their money. Then they're gonna try and see if they can penny and dime or cents in our country. And it's another shit thing to be like, yeah, we're gonna try and steal money from you, and they're gonna make everything expensive for you. I'm like, just give me a good single player game. That's why I prefer to give money towards indie games nowadays. That's why I have a huge list of 175 games on my wish list on Steam right now. So every time something comes cheap, I'll buy it. I got a huge list on there.
Yeah, that's big.
Right there with you, Mume. How are you feeling about this live service focus, Aaron?
It sucks, man. It sucks. I think last time I was on the podcast, I was saying like I can always see the logic of why, I just don't agree with it. And, you know, like when it comes to the logic here, it makes sense, right? Like if you look at all it really takes is for one development studio to make a breakout game that is going to hook people, and their revenue stream is solid for the next however many years, right? Look at Fortnite, look at Roblox, look at all those other games that have done it. If you can create the next Fortnite, like it won't matter if your next games after that fail and don't bring in any cash, you are set for life. Like, and I understand that, like, every development company is giving it a go. I think Ubisoft gave it a go as well, and that died really quick with Hyperscape, I think it was called. Like, and, you know, Rumbleverse was one of the latest ones also by Iron Galaxy that died heavily, and then they decided to go back to Killer Instinct. So, like, I can absolutely see why they do it. I just hate it because it's always a gamble, and it also limits what I like, which is the same with you, Mume, which is, like, a full, solid release game, which isn't always on, that I can get my quality hours into, like Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War. So, yeah, I don't like it, but I understand it.
Look, it pisses me off on so many levels. So, the first thing that annoys me about it is that most likely these games are going to fail. If we look at the success rate of these live service games, there's only so many people in the world and so many hours in the week. So, only so many of these live service games that demand so much of your time are feasible. We've already got Fortnite, we've already got Destiny, we've got all these MMOs that people love, like Final Fantasy 14. A lot of people still play World of Warcraft. People have their things, they have their second lives that they're doing already. No one is sitting there going, oh, I need another one of these to pick up. These other ones just aren't doing it for me. We already have these really successful ones, and we've just seen so many of them fail. It's like, you know, we've seen, like, Anthem, Outriders has no player count now. Things like, oh, God, Battlefield 2042, that was an always online one. Fallout 76, Ghost Recon Breakpoint. It's gotten so bad to the point now that even, like, single-player stuff is having these live service elements. Ubisoft are one of the worst with this. Like, for some reason, Far Cry 6 had hub areas and gear scores and always online shit. Like, why? You could play it offline, but why did it need all this live service bullshit? It didn't. It's because they just see the dollar signs popping up here. The live services that have been successful are basically just excuses to print money. Like, look at the easiest example, Grand Theft Auto Online. It is the most profitable single media piece to date. No, nothing has made more money than that, like, as a single piece of media property. It is fucking ridiculous. It's pretty much Rockstar's excuse to print cash. So I see why they're doing it. They're really chasing that dragon. But as I mentioned, there's only so many that can actually fucking make it. Like, Destiny 2's having all this trouble now. They've been doing it for years and they're still having trouble. Sony spent $2 billion on them. With the idea that they were going to be able to help them with their live service shit, and Destiny can't even keep their own fucking shit intact. They're having to fire people and in the worst ways possible and missing all their own revenue targets. So I just don't understand why they're all willing to throw so much weight behind this. It makes the games so much worse. It as far as, like, game preservation and longevity goes, it really fucks them up there too, because if you... You know, if the servers go down, this game just becomes completely unplayable. So it's just lost to history and time. I just don't know how many of these games, like, we've got Babylon's Fall. There's so many that we can mention. There's an exhaustive amount of these games that have failed. There was, like, some Knockout City, that fucking one where you're throwing dodgeballs at each other. Even ones that were successful for a little while or saw even great success at the start are floundering now. Fall Guys, which I fucking adore that game. Great multiplayer game. But even they're struggling to retain people because everyone wants these multiplayer things to be something that just lasts literally forever. But most people's attention spans aren't that much. You can't keep the content coming out consistently enough and change things up enough over time to be able to keep people coming back for literally the rest of all time. We're going to see them fail eventually. So I hope that this ends up just evaporating from the industry. I find it very disappointing to know that Wonder Woman's going to be featuring these kinds of elements. I was tentatively excited by that because, you know, Wonder Woman is being made by Monolith. I really like Shadow of Mordor. I even like Shadow of War once they fixed up all the bullshit loot box microtransaction bullshit that they tried to do with it.
Oh, yeah, that was a thing.
It's
Yeah,
it would have been cool to see the Nemesis system in Wonder Woman's universe and see what they do with it. But now I just know it's going to be full of this always online bullshit and fucking different colored whips they're going to try and sell me for Wonder Woman, different tiaras or whatever. I'm just so fucking over it. They got those menu systems where it's a cursor, even though you're playing on fucking console. Why have I got a cursor? Why am I moving again? Like, fuck. It's just, there's so many trappings and annoying things about live service games that I fucking hate. And I'm so annoyed. All these companies are going to be whinging in 3 years' time about how 99% of these games have failed, and they're going to be firing so many employees when it happens as well. And it's all going to be the fault of this stupid fucking management and leadership that we have in the games industry today. And God, speaking of Warner Brothers and their live service stuff, we did get a trailer for the new Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League game. It was like a gameplay story trailer kind of a thing that came out earlier this week. Now, this was a game I was super, super excited for until finding out last year, as a lot of people did, that they're going to be filling it up with live service bullshit. It's going to have a battle pass, a free one, and a paid one, you know, loot scores, all that fun shit. Did either of you check out that new gameplay and story stuff from the Suicide Squad?
Oh, I did, actually, yes.
Yeah, what were your thoughts?
I saw a little bit.
I hate open world games. They're just too much for me to deal with nowadays.
Oh, okay. Yep.
I saw it, watching it, it's like, it looks nice, but yeah, they're making like a huge open world. It's going to be a live service, obviously, so it's like they have delayed the game because I think it was supposed to come out May this year. And then they just after the backlash from everybody saying, like, why are you doing this, Warner Brothers? Why? Why? No one likes this. Nobody asked for this. So, yeah, and I'm really hoping they do fix the game up with the time they have. But now they're down to, like, 2 months now before its proper release date. So I don't know what they fixed or what they changed in the game. But they are showing off new content over the course to his release date, so hopefully they don't fuck this one up, but I doubt it.
Oh, fingers crossed. Aaron, what did you think of the gameplay story trailer?
I like the traversal. Like, I was watching that and I was thinking, yeah, I kind of like the way that they move. It looks more smooth and more fluid, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing, right? Like, you've really felt that in Spider-Man, the new Spider-Man, like how fun traversal can be when you actually get it right and how smooth it can be. But the game itself, no, I've got no interest, absolutely none. It looks just like a basic kind of open world shooter in a way. To me, that doesn't make me want to rush to the stores and put a pre-order in and pay full price and get on day one. If you've got nothing to bring except for traversal, that's wait for a discount for me kind of thing.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And look, I love Rocksteady. The Arkham games are some of my favorite games of all time. I even loved Arkham Knight, which a lot of people had a lot of issues with. So when I first heard that they were doing this Suicide Squad game, I was super excited, like super pumped. But then I was right there with everyone when we found out about all the live service shit, just being instantly worried. And the backlash was so bad that they delayed it for a year. So the backlash is so bad about live service stuff, you delay your most anticipated upcoming game from your most high quality developer for a whole year, right? Because of live service. And then that following year, you say, oh, we're going to double down on live service, the thing that is decimating one of our biggest titles coming out. Just the logic here makes no fucking sense to me, whatever. I do not know what David Zaslav is thinking. Like, how do these fools get to these levels? And look, from the gameplay trailer, for me, it looks like a fun third-person co-op shooter with some interesting traversal. I'll probably play it when it comes out. I'll definitely check it out. I'm intrigued a bit by the story, and the characterization seems to be done quite well. I'm just worried about all those live service trappings. I am yet to this day to play a live service game that actually has a decent story and just isn't full of all that hub world bullshit, resource gathering, and it just grind that they try to put in there. So you're more inclined to do microtransactions. So, yeah.
Microtransactions.
Yeah, microtransactions. That's the only microtransaction you want.
Ooh. Oh, that'll be a great name for you, Zach.
There you go.
You mentioned before, like, you know, that you're a fan of Rocksteady and what they did with the Arkham games. And I have to admit, like, being a Marvel fan, I was never really much into DC, but I do actually enjoy the Arkham games. Because they brought something unique, and they built upon that, like, with every iteration. And that was, like, a lived-in city that just felt so good to traverse around and fight it and everything. I think people need to understand, though, that this isn't that. Like, yes, it's story, just like it was in with Rocksteady's, you know, touch on it. I get that. And, like I said, traversal looks great. Outside of that, though, I can't see anything that is making me go, this feels like it's going to be Arkham again and the Arkham series and that, you know, what Arkham brought. Everything I've seen so far makes me think, okay, yeah, there's a good story and traversal looks good, but this just looks like any open world kind of shooter game kind of thing. Like, is there something there that you can see outside of that I can't?
No, it just looks like a quirky, yeah, third-person co-op shooter, which, look, you know, I enjoy some of those. It'd be fun to get into it with Hunter and whoever else wants to jump into it with me. I don't know, like, I just don't trust them to A, have it running well and stuff on launch. Like, let's look at all the botched launches. Live services games are so known for it, because usually they're like, oh, it's a live service, we'll just update it later and fix everything later. It's a problem enough with single player games, let alone live service, so I don't know. I'm gonna get it. I don't have any real excitement for it, but yeah, I guess we'll see when it comes out. All I know is I am definitely nervous about live service. Oh, that was supposed to be the other bit of bread in our depression sandwich. Like, because I thought, oh, you know, it's a fun enough gameplay. But yeah, I think that all the live service bullshit has really just put a damper on any excitement for Suicide Squad.
You can't put sugar on that bread when it comes to live service, mate.
That's it. Make some fairy bread, put some fucking hundreds and thousands on there. Nope. A happening. But what is a happening is the game's coming up in the next week. And the games industry has decided to chill the fuck out this week. There's only two games coming up, which I'm pretty shocked by. We have, on the 21st of November, we have Irem Collection Volume 1 coming to all platforms except for PC. Very odd why that's coming to everything but PC. Anyway, then we have Wordless, also coming November 21st to all platforms, including PC, that one. Mume, either of those games stand out to you?
Well, for stars, I have no idea what this Irem Collection is, for starters.
Yeah. Like, why is it not a capital at the start of it? It's weird.
I'm just having a quick look. I'm just having a quick look now to find out what the hell is it. It looks like one of those, like, old school, like, shooter games, like bullet hell shooters. Because what I can see here.
That's actually, okay. I like that.
Yeah, yes, it's supposed to be one of those, like, yeah, arcade, like, yeah, shoot 'em ups where you're flying a ship, like R-Type. But it doesn't look like my type of game. No, but Wordless, it was actually a game that I played during the Steam Netflix, and I actually is one of the games.
I think I called it Wordless.
Yeah, because I think it's called Wordless, not Wordless.
Zach's just realized that.
Yeah, you were right. It is Wordless. Oh my god, Wordless. Fuck me. Sorry. What is it, Mime?
It's supposed to be like a it's kind of like a turn-based type of game. I'm not sure how to properly say it. Because, like, I did play the game during the Next Fest. The, like, couple, last year or something. It's like, it's a mixture of, like, turn-based combat in a way. So you have a bar that fills up, that goes down when you use certain moves and combos, and then they attack, and then you have to time your blocks. So it's hard to explain how this game looks like, because it looks very simple. It looks pretty, very nice. Like, I like how it looks. But yeah, like, it is hard to explain how this game works, because it's not a proper genre of games that we know. So yeah, like I said, it is turn-based. So you do your attacks and they do their attacks. And the idea is that you got to find out their weaknesses by breaking their, like, defensive, and you do more extra damage. And then they'll try to do the same thing to you. So they can hit you with either magical or physical defense. So you have to block one or the other. So if you have to learn how to perfect guard them. So once you figure out how to perfect guard the things, then you have more shield to withstand the damage, because when the shield breaks, you just take a lot more damage, which is not very fun. But it is a very... It's not like a hard game in a way. It's like, if you fail, you just fly back and you just have to fight the one-on-one fight again. So it's not that hardish in Dark Souls where you die, go to a save point, and then do this shit all over again.
Have you played it, maybe?
Yes, I have, yes. It's a very interesting game, though. And it is on my wish list.
Okay. Oh, was it at, like, a Steam Next Fest demo or something?
Yes, it was, yeah. And there is a demo available still, if you want to give it a try.
Oh, there you go. Nice. I always love it when devs do that. Aaron, did either of those stand out to you?
Not really, but I am. I liked what Mume was saying about this worldless game, and I'm looking at it now. It kind of looks fun. It's like a kind of like a graphical platformer with turn-based combat, by the looks of it, kind of thing.
Would you say it's leaving you wordless?
Yeah, I love that. You try to cover up that mistake. I love it. Yeah,
That was the joke the whole time. I was just being clever. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be picking it up. I think that game's going to be Aaronless.
That's totally fair. Yeah, no, neither of these sound like they're my cup of tea, though. Though Worldless does look intriguing. There's like a bit, you're doing a bit of 2D platforming and stuff here or there as well, too. Maybe want to check out if any of that stuff Mume was saying sounds interesting to you. But that'll do us for the games coming up in the next week. How about we take a brief break and then we jump back on in with the games that we've been playing. Mume, you are our guest. It is tradition on News to Reviews for our guest to get us kicked off with impressions. What have you been playing this week, my friend?
Well, obviously, I would like to keep the better game for last, since you really want me to talk about it. But so the other game I prefer to talk about is, I've been trying to play through the Yakuza games, or Like a Dragon, they have to call it now. So at the moment, I have been playing... Since I am a big sucker for RPGs, I wasn't a big fan of the other Yakuza games, because it's all street fighting type of combat type of game. But when they released Like a Dragon and they made it into a turn-based game, I'm like, hook me up. I wasn't expecting the game to be so weird in ways, because when you're playing it, it was like, oh, how can they implement a turn-based RPG game into a Yakuza game? And for somehow, they fucking managed to pull it off. I don't know how, but bloody hell, they pulled it off.
So, Like a Dragon, is that now the mainline series?
That's the new name of the games, yes.
Yeah, they renamed it Yakuza.
Okay, so are they still going to be doing the Brawler-style games?
Not at the moment. So, what I've been told is that since the game did so well, that they're going to be making it as a turn-based here on out, as the main franchise ones.
Wow. What a massive pivot. Like, two very, very different genres, turn-based and brawler.
What I've learned is that the Like a Dragon games, they're going to make it turn-based, while they're going to try and keep the Judgment games, or Lost Judgment, as the old beat-em-ups. I think they're going to be throwing some old beat-em-ups, because they did release that Like a Dragon Gaiden, which is pretty much a old-school Yakuza game, where you're just beating up randos on the streets.
Yeah.
Mume, are they doing a an Animal Crossing game as well, I think, coming up, and it's called Like a Dragon?
No, no. No. It is in the game itself. In the Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. So they're actually adding an Animal Crossing like game into it. So you actually
shit.
So it's so insane. I'm like, this is Yakuza games. So they are insanely weird.
Mm.
So that what I'm talking about is that DLC for Like a Dragon, is it? Like, is it or an expansion or is it like its own spin-off game that they're
No. It's actually So Infinite Wealth is the sequel to Like a Dragon and Like a Dragon Gaiden. But yeah, no, that whole Animal Crossing thing, it is in the game itself. No DLC. It comes in the base game.
So is it just one of those arcade machines?
No. The idea is that you actually go to an island and you actually build buildings and get people, residents to live there. And then eventually you have to start fighting off, like poachers and invaders that attack your businesses and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, that sounds really cool. Cause yeah, I know, I've played like Yakuza 0, I think it was, years and years ago, and the amount of games that they put in the games, like you can go to these arcades and they're full of all these different games, but you're actually using your actual character and going to an island and doing a Animal Crossing style game within the game. That's fucking insanity. So which is the one that you've been playing right now?
Like a Dragon, so that's the 7th game.
Okay. So you haven't checked out... The Gaiden, the man who erased his name that
no,
came out
No, not
recently?
Yet, not yet. I am playing, because it is supposed to be a sequel to it, so I thought play through that first, but I need to play through the old games first as well. I do own, I don't own them. I do have pretty much all the games, including Gaiden, on the Game Pass. So I have them all downloaded, ready, so once I start playing through bit by bit. I have finished the first Kiwami one, Yakuza Kiwami, which is the remake of the original back in the old PS2 days. I finished that. I do have about an hour or two in Kiwami 2. So I have played the game for a while now, ages ago, but apparently the engine plays pretty bad on PC. Because there's a lot of times where when I was playing Kiwami 2, they were having some issues where the game would just freeze for about 20 seconds and then it would just continue like normal. And it was doing that constantly. Yeah. I've learned that I think it has something to do with the like the firewall or antivirus that causes that game to freeze up. But the problem is that since it's the Game Pass game, it's kind of like it's hidden in your hard drive somewhere. You can't really technically find the file itself because it's Windows. So I'm like, it's a shitty concept though. So yes. So that's how it works. Okay, so as I said, the game is an RPG. So you have commands, you got items to use, you can also have skills on your characters. And yeah, so the whole premise is, I'll give you a breakdown of the story. So you play as a Yakuza named Ichiban. I love his name though, Ichi. Ichi's cool. And yeah, so you...
This means one, right?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Ichi-san, yeah.
Yeah. So the idea is that he's in a low level Yakuza clan, the Tojo clan. Oh, sorry, the Orikama family. That's where he's in. So yeah. So throughout the story, you're just your low life, low grade, what's it called again?
Like a grunt, like
not a grunt, but the idea is that he just goes gets payments from people that they owe money for.
Oh, a debt collector.
Like a debt collector, yes, yeah. So, yeah, he started as that. And,
loan shark.
Yeah, so, and then he goes to a birthday party for his young master, which he goes to a one of those, hostess bars where the girlfriend is a hostess. So, things, roughly bad thing happens, and then you learn that someone from the clan killed another clan member from a different clan. And the idea was that your patriarch or the clan leader, the family boss kind of thing, he told you to take the fall for them to go to prison. So after he was in there for 18 years, he decides to like I said, is 18 years is in, and so he's not know about the old new technology and such, so he doesn't know about it because it happened in around. I think 2000, I think the game And then, like, 18...
So he's come out of prison, he's like, what's with all these phones?
Yeah, oh, smartphones, he doesn't know about smartphones, he doesn't know about, like, all the robotic things that you come across, like, in Japan and such.
Yeah. You can fuck this flashlight, what's going on?
So, yeah, so then later throughout the story, you learn that the clan that you were in disbanded, and then your patriarch went to another Yakuza clan. And then later when you found out, when you see him, he literally shoots you and leaves you for dead.
Okay. And then the screen goes black and then the title card.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Up. I'm in the moment with you, Mume. That's an intriguing start to the story. And like from Yakuza, I've played I found the game itself, its design and the gameplay to be kind of archaic. It felt like playing a PS2 game, but the story was fucking fascinating. And yeah, it sounds like this one is no slouch either. How have you found the gameplay to be?
It's fun. It's so insanely insane, like the way you use some of your moves and such. But all the moves has a bit of a like over the top action, but it's still grounded in a ways. So one character would be like one of your first ally that you get up, like a homeless guy. So he's technically your starter healer because he actually has healing abilities, so he can heal you up when you're in combat.
Okay.
So when he has a thing called gnarly breath or something like that, where he reduces your attack on enemies. So literally, he just goes like gives you like a bad breath on an enemy to drop the attack.
That's ridiculous. And
one of his other moves is called a pyro breath or something like that, where he literally just puts alcohol in his mouth and uses a lighter to make a flamethrower for himself. So that's your magic attack.
Okay.
because next to the icons of the words, it will show you like a little magic staff that tells you it's a magic move. Mm. But the word but the moves are very like grounded. So it's like. Another character you guess she can learn a hostess job, a character, where she would just shake up a wine bottle and just spray it on enemies, which is like water damage. it is a bit silly, but like it's well made.
No, look, I love that. Like, you know, every you got to have these different kinds of actions in every turn-based game, and the more creative they get with it, the more interesting I find it. It's like the South Park turn-based games. The moves that you would do in that is ridiculous. Like, there's some where you just straight up throw shit at people. It's so much fun and it's wacky, but also like they kind of try to ground it in the universe of South Park, which is, yeah, I love a bit of that. Was this the one where like you fight old men and wearing nappies and stuff, or
there
diapers?
There is a scene of that, because like you do see him in like other Yakuza games, so it's a running thing. But one of the there is a side quest in the game where you do supposed to find like baby powder or something like that, and then you realize that it's for old like grown up men, and apparently it's actually a clan in that as well, of like people wearing diapers and such. It was a bit silly, but the funny thing is that after you beat these guys, they become a what they call. Okay, so in Final Fantasy, you know that you can call out summons, so you can summon out big powerful monsters and enemies to do big amount of damage. In this game, they call them pound mates. So they call them pound mates.
That's what I call my missus, you know what I'm saying? Woo!
Bounce your wow wow. So yeah, pound mates are pretty much your summons in Yakuza. So the idea is that you have to pay money to summon them. They're kind of like it's like an app on your phone. It is pretty funny because like the way he does it, he does like a cool thing where he grabs his phone out and does like cool, like over the insane swipes. He's like, time to call a friend. and one of the power mates is actually them, where what he does is that he doesn't do any damage, but he just does like a thing where he just cries like a baby, and then they just all the enemies on the in the fight, they take they get attack and defense decreased debuffs, so it's very good. But obviously there are certain rules to when you summon, because like it will tell you on the side on the screens like this summon can only work during nighttime, this one can only work through the day. If you have no reception in certain dungeons, you can't summon them because it's you need a phone reception to call. So there are some cases that you can't do that. But one of the like silliest things in that game is that throughout the game, you obviously you're ex-yakuza, you have no money, you're jobless. So the idea is like you need to start earning money somehow so you can able to get back and find out why he shot you. Because like he doesn't explain why. But then yeah, then you have to go to a thing called Hallow Work, which is a think of it like a Centrelink type of a thing. So you go there to earn work, which in other words, you learn jobs, which they're your classes in the game. So that's how you change classes in the game by disguised. Going for work.
Okay, so your employment decides what class you're in.
Oh, yeah, well, you do unlock them based on certain stats, because, like, you have, like, RPG stats where you need to build up, like, say, charisma or intelligence to a certain degree to unlock those classes for Kazuga. So you get some funny ones where you have a breaker, which is, like, a breakdancing character. You got chef, you got enforcer, you got a bodyguard class, you got hostess, idol. Musician is another one you can do as well. That's technically your bard character.
Cool.
Because okay. they use a guitar when they use their melee attacks. Like the acoustic guitars. But yeah, it is like I said, the game is insanely bullshit, but it is still grounded because the ideas of Kazuga, the main character, Ichiban, he's obsessed with Dragon Quest. So he loves Dragon Quest with a passion. So like, and when he played Dragon Quest, when you fight enemies on the normal world in Yokohama, the enemies transform and your characters transform based on their class. And like, and the guy's like, wait, did these guys just transform? He's like, Kazuga, what the hell are you on about? They're just regular people. No, I saw them transform. they changed. So like, he has the imagination of like, when he goes into battles, it becomes like a proper RPG battle.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's all in his head, kind of thing. So I'm like, it's pretty cool. Even to the point, like some characters are like you must be talking about your game nonsense again, aren't you, Ichiban? Like, no.
Oh, that's cool. That sounds fun. So it sounds like a really wacky turn-based RPG. But is the actual gameplay of the turn-based RPG is it good compared to others?
Oh okay, yeah, cool. definitely fun. There are things where you can each enemy will have a certain weakness. If you can do enough damage to that weakness, they'll go down. But if you can able to like attack them while they're down, you have like an opportunity attack that does extra damage while they're down. But even if you like, it's a bit weird because you only have a few seconds to do it before they get back up on their feet again. But if you manage to enable the attack before they get up, even if they get up, you still get the opportunity attack like damage increase.
Okay, cool. So there's lots of strategy.
Yeah. Because there are a bit of strategy, because like even based around your character's movement, because you can't control them in the combat, so they slowly like walk back and forth and around certain enemies, and they start saying shit to other people. It's like, you want to go, mate? You wanna fight me? Kind of thing. So if you do a non-skill attack, say a regular attack to an enemy, and like another enemy is like say in the line of sight when you're running towards them, they can just trip you and then you just lose that attack. So also positioning is also viable in that game too, because like, I think only Kazuka can do this, not the other characters. Where if you see like a little object around, like say a bicycle or like say like a gas can, he'll grab it and then we start whacking him with it.
Jesus.
Like in your Yakuza games.
Yeah, I've seen someone swinging around a motorbike, which is just bullshit and a lot of fun. So yeah, love it.
Yeah, so yeah.
Oh, it sounds super cool. So have you finished it yet?
I'm kind of stuck at the moment with this certain part because I kind of maybe underleveled my character to a certain point where I'm like, okay, so you're level 50. I'm only at level 36, so I'm a bit underpowered for this fight. but luckily, I said to myself, look, they had like a, you know, when you play certain games, it would be like, oh, this is like the point of no return. So if you continue from this point onwards, you cannot gain access to the older areas and such. So I said to myself, all right, I'll make it like a spare save file just in case. like, before I actually go continue on, and luckily I did, because I'm like, I'm struggling where I am right now. So I thought, all right, I'll lose a couple hours of my playthrough, and I'll try to do some old side quests and try to level up my characters a little bit more before I fight them. And so I backtrack a little bit to get back into it.
Okay, cool, nice. Well, do you have anything left to say on Like a Dragon?
If you like your RPGs, it's definitely a worthy play. If you have a Game Pass for Xbox or for PC, it's a good recommendation to give it a try if you're down to for a new RPG game, like a turn-based RPG.
Yeah, I feel like I want to let Lockie know about this one, because he loves his turn-based RPGs, and he loves ridiculous bullshit, so I feel like this might be right up his alley.
I would say Lockie would give this one a good try. He would definitely like it, because, like, just how insane it is.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Awesome. He obviously loves a good narrative as well, too, so I'm sure he would be down for it. Now, do you think you've played enough to leave a review score, or because you haven't finished it, you think you'll...
Maybe I'll wait out till then.
Totally, totally fair. Well, that's not the only game that you're here to talk about, Mume. I'm so pumped to talk about this one. I've been just hearing about it all over Twitter since its release, and I'm fucking over it because the FOMO is killing me at this point. Mume, what else have you been playing?
All right, time to talk about the one game. Oh, well, you already mentioned that last podcast. Of what I was going to talk about. So, as those who listened to his last podcast, he had mentioned my name and a particular game that I picked up around Halloween, actually. And that game, oh my god, it was a 13-year wait, and I was so stoked about it. I played, finally, Alan Wake 2. And,
yo!
Woo! That game is so good!
Nice.
Alright, where the hell do I begin with this game? So, for those who have played the original Alan Wake, this game does take place 13 years after the original Alan Wake. Which, funny story, when you look at it, it is 13 years since the game's release.
Can you imagine if they had to delay it? They're like, oh, fuck, we're going to have to get everyone to re-record to 14.
So the game does take place after... for 13 years, where Alan is still stuck in the dark place or the dark presence, and he's trying to write himself out by writing his stuff. So he's writing a story to get himself out of the dark place, because he needs to make it work for him. Like, he has to write it in a story where it makes sense, and that allows him to walk, like, able to get out. So since he's been struggling to do that, he actually made another story where his evil gobbleganger, Mr. Scratch, has been writing, he's been editing his book, his writing, which I kind of noticed now, because, like, the original one was more like crime novel drama type of thing, because, like, he used to write, like, crime novels. But then what happened was he turned the writing into a horror story. That's why the game became a horror, survival horror, instead of the action thriller that it was in the original. So I'm like, another meta writing thing from the writer. So he loves his meta writing. So he likes to. It's the game is insane. I can't get over how good it is. What else can I throw in there? Like, oh, any questions you want to ask me about this game?
Oh, look, that's great to get us started. I'll throw to you now, Aaron, because I know you've also been playing this. How's your time been so far with Alan Wake 2?
I can't believe how much I absolutely adore this game. Like, to me, it's my game of the year, like, hands down.
Damn.
Like, it was Spider-Man, like, because Venom and how much I love that and everything, but there were parts in Spider-Man, which we've been over before and I won't go over again, that did kind of let me down. Alan Wake so far, there has not been anything that's let me down. It's just been so compelling the whole way. I'm about halfway through at the moment. I got to the I won't spoil anything, but I got to that one stage that everyone talks about, kind of thing, about how incredible it is. And then I decided I had it on PC, and I got to that stage and I'm like, okay, I'm getting it on Xbox, because I just... And then I restarted it. So I've gone back to the start now, and I'm trying to get back to where I was, because I just didn't want to have any sort of PC troubles. My PC's not the best. And I'm like, I don't want a frame rate drop. I don't want to crash. This game is too damn good for all of that. So, let's go back and do it on Series X. And, mate, I can't stop playing that game. I can't stop thinking about it. I just want to play it now. It's just so incredible.
Oh, that's so cool. Because you're not normally a survival horror fan, are you, Aaron?
Not really. I mean, I did like the... I played all the Resident Evils. I played every Resident Evil game. And yep. I loved what they did with Resi 2. And brought that back in a remake kind of thing. And I loved it so much. And Resi 3 was good too. But when Resi 4 came out, I'm like, oh, it's kind of the same old now. We're just treading the same old ground. And that was kind of my experience with survival, modern survival horror. This game feels like an evolution of the original Resi games, like Resi 2 and 3 Remake. This feels like something fresh but still familiar. It plays the same way, but it also adds more elements to it. Like you just said, Mumei, the story is incredible and how meta it is and how much it makes you think. To answer your question, I'm not so much a survival horror kind of guy. I haven't played Outlast and all the other kind of survival horror games. But this one has me hooked, and I absolutely adore it, like, everything.
Oh, far out. I'm getting so much FOMO with this. Like, I'm not a survival horror fan either. But, you know, I love Dead Space and Dead Space 2 and Dead Space Remake. And this is just... The stuff I'm hearing just keeps ticking all those boxes for me of just... It's super weird. The story's super interesting. And it's not that heavily focused on action. Would you say that's right, Mumei? Like, there's not too much running and gunning in this one?
No, definitely not running and gunning. Especially when you're playing through Alan's story. Because, like... So, when you play both characters, you do play Saga, where you play in the real world, and then you've got Alan playing in the dark place. So, their gameplay, it's the same. So, they play the same, but the atmosphere of the worlds are a little bit different. So, okay. you got Saga, when you're playing in the real world, that one plays where you have, like, only, like, a couple enemies attacking you, where your typical flashlight, remove their shield, shoot them until they die. But in Alan Wake, during Alan's, like, playthrough, what makes it harder, because I like, a lot of people prefer to play Saga's story better. I actually like Alan's story. It's not as good compared to the story-wise, but I love the atmosphere of the game and of his playthrough, because the idea is that since you're in the dark place, you see a lot of, like, shadow silhouettes and all that. And the thing is that a lot of them don't attack you, but they do like to say, they like to, like, whisper in your ear and all that. It's like, Alan.
Wake.
Alan.
Yeah.
Alan.
Wake.
Yeah, wake. You're drowned.
It's so good.
Yeah, because, like, what gets me about that one is that one's more surreal than the original, than Saga's story. Because, like it says, there's since it's in the real world, you have to deal with the people there. In this one, you have, as I said, you're dealing with silhouette enemies and all that. Most of them will not attack you. Some will. That one, you're always going to be on your edge, because, like, that one, I'm like, because, like, as soon as I hear, like, if I see, like, a lot of shadow figures and all that running around me, I'll have my flashlight just to be prepared, ready, because some of them will be, like, because, like, in horror games, like, especially in Resident Evil, because, like, you just have zombies that just slowly walk towards you kind of thing. These guys, like, you start hearing them, next thing you know, they'll start zooming towards you. So you're like, oh, I'm gonna dodge kind of thing.
What about the wolf? Do you remember the wolf? Like in the first level where you're at Cauldron Lake kind of thing, and like it just spawns and you don't know where it is, and then before you know it, it's like on you, it's disappears by the time you get your bearings kind of thing, and hear it in the background.
When I come across those wolf parts, I always have a shotgun ready.
Yeah. Okay. You got it.
Just be careful. Try to stick to stuff that's been in trailers if you can. I don't know if I haven't watched all the trailers, so I don't know if that has been. But yeah, that's early on. I'm sure it's.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure
it is early on. Yeah.
Oh, it's very early on. It's like the first level. Yeah.
But I will definitely say this now: when you're playing the game, do have some surround headsets, because the audio, my God, incredible. The fucking audio in this game is so damn good. Yeah. And I'm using SteelSeries headsets, but I'm also using like a SteelSeries app that allows me to add like better surround sound. It makes it better, which is like, with that, it's so good, especially in certain parts in the game where you have to fight certain things, which I will not say anything. But okay. when you're in those parts, like everything around you is just like, you're always on your guard. Cause like, it's always tense. Like you're walking normal through this forest and then all of a sudden you can hear like, a little sound behind you, so you like you just turn around and be like, all right, I can hear you. Where the fuck are you?
Yeah, oh, I love that. I wasn't the biggest fan of Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice, but something that I love that they did was the sound design and how you would hear whispering coming from different directions. If you were wearing 3D headphones, that was some really, really
They even recommended you that at the start of the game. He's like, recommend you having headphones with surround sound.
It's just, it's so crucial to the horror survival experience. Like, I played through Dead Space Remake with headphones on, and I'd definitely recommend that as the way to do it. Lights off, headphones on, diaper on, ready to shit yourself.
It's a bit
bloody
like that.
Love it. Now, I have heard some minor criticisms, and I'll throw to you for this one, Aaron, about finding the, so that in this, apparently there's a, and this was shown in the trailers and stuff as well. Apparently there's a mind palace, you know, it's kind of like what they had in the Sherlock, the BBC Sherlock TV show, where basically, I don't know if you can do it as Alan, but I know as the female protagonist, you can do that. And you use that to solve the puzzles and crimes. I've heard some people saying that it can be quite tedious. Like, you can figure out yourself how to solve the puzzle, but until you actually open up the mind palace and put the puzzle piece there, it's like, it's just this extra step that you have to do. Would you say that rings true at all, Aaron?
Yeah, I think it's divisive. Like, I think some people will love it, some people won't. Okay. When I first did it, I loved it. Like, you press select on the controller and you go into her mind place, and it's essentially like a board. Like, she has like a board and she puts up all these photos that she's collected or information she's collected. This is Saga I'm talking about, the female protagonist. And she starts, and then you have to choose where to put it on the board. Like, there's all these different kind of branching lines about what's happening in the story, and then you put the pictures or whatever you have up there, and she then completes it in her head. She's like, oh, I see. So that means that this. When I first did it, I thought that it was just kind of like an FYI, like, so you might be able to keep track of what's going on a little bit more. But then when I kept playing the game, I actually realized that, no, you kind of have to do this sometimes, because she will then tell you, right, now I understand. This is over in this place. I need to go to this place.
Even though you already know about it.
yeah, like, it'll be in the story, but sometimes if you miss it or you don't know what's going on, then you need to go to the mind place, and then she'll tell you, like, oh, okay, I need to go over to here now because of this reason and this reason. And I only worked that out because I was playing around with it, kind of thing.
Okay. And it's instant, though, too, right? Like, aren't you just snapped into the mind palace whenever you need to? Okay.
Yeah. Just go straight there. If you hold down select, it brings up the map, so you can see where you are in the world. But if you just press it, you go directly into this mind place. It's like, what's that game that you love on PlayStation 5 where it just goes between worlds? Ratchet and Clank? You know how, like, you just go straight into that world? There's no loading or anything? It's the exact same. You just press a button, you're right there, kind of thing, in that world.
There is a thing, though, with the mind place. It says, like, you can instantly go in there, no problems. Like, as a PC player, I was playing it with Tab. Tab is your mind place. But do take cautious, though, because, like, if you, like, say, you're in the middle of a combat and then, like, you hit that mind place button, it's not going to work, because the idea is that the game is still happening in real time in the game. Mm. So if you're getting attacked by anyone, yeah, you'll still get attacked. Like Dark Souls, so you can't pause it.
Oh, okay, fair enough. So can you pause, though, normally?
You can pause it, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. I like that. So how did you find it, Mume? Did you find it tedious, or did you enjoy that mechanic?
Okay, so I find it cool because you are playing an FBI agent who knows how to gather evidence and profiling people and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And I still find that interesting. But there are certain parts in the game where it's like, you need to profile certain things, or you have to, like, connect the dots to progress with the story, even though you already know about it. It's like, I already know these guys I gotta talk to, but that you have to do this stuff to question them and continue with the story.
Yeah.
Which, I wasn't fond of that one. But I am, but I will say this now, but even Alan Wake has his own, I wouldn't say mind place, but they call it the writer's room. And his one is pretty more interesting, because, like, the idea is that, as you said, you're trying to write a story to get yourself out of the dark place. And what makes it interesting is that certain parts in a certain stage, you can rewrite the story and it will completely change the whole area based on what you've written, which I think is pretty cool. It's a really interesting concept, that one. And it happens like frequent, like it happens like instant too. So it's no load time or anything like that. You just see like a cool, like a background thing where you see like a typewriter and then boom, the room just changes. And then it is freaking cool.
Oh, that's so cool. So you finished Alan Wake 2, haven't you, Mumei?
Oh, yeah. I finished it literally like in 3-4 days.
Do you think it's fair, all the Game of the Year chatter it's been getting?
It's definitely Game of the Year material, but there's no chance that he's going to win that. especially with the games they have this year. Like, obviously, people want Baldur's Gate 3 to win, which I want them to do.
We did see this week the Game Awards nominees were announced, and Alan Wake was amongst them. And I see nothing but universal praise for it on Twitter. I think the only issue I've heard anyone have with it is some of the mind play stuff. So
I do have a couple of gripes.
Yep,
with the game is. As someone who plays on PC, because like as someone who has played through RE1, 2, sorry, not 1, 2, 3, and 4 remake this year, I do like the premise where like I can use the mouse wheel to change my weapons. In Alan Wake, that's not a thing. And there's no option in the menu either. So I can't change weapons with the mouse wheel. I have to rely on the key numbers of 1 to 4 to change weapons.
Okay.
And I'm like that sucks, because the idea is like I can't, because in Resident Evil, when you go into your inventories, the game freezes. Like obviously the game gets paused. Alan Wake doesn't pause in that game. It's like you can pause the game normally by like hitting escape or start button, but when you want to change weapons or you want to use an item and all that, looking at your inventory, it's still in real time. So it is a bit like, especially if you're like low on health and you're trying to rush to get to your like first aid kit or painkillers to take another hit or something enough to last for another shot. It's like you're panicking. It's like, shit, these guys are slowly running towards me. I'm like, fuck, I need to get my item out.
So it sounds more to me like a intentional design choice rather than they're just, you know, not giving you that option. They want you to panic
I'm fine with
looking
that.
Around your inventory for your ammo or your med kit or whatever. Like it's sounds to me like it's supposed to instead.
I am fine with that, with the like no pausing and all that kind of stuff, which I'm fine with that. But the issue is that like as someone who plays on a mouse, I would love if they give me the mouse wheel to switch to the weapon I want, because like as I said, I'm in the middle of a panic where I'm trying to like avoid getting hit by long range moves, close range people. And then, like, I have to rely on my fingers, and I'm like, I can't look at my keyboard and be like, oh, I need to hit 4, but I keep hitting 3. I was like, no, there's nothing on my knee.
Yeah. I just want to say that, like, that sucks for PC players that are using mouse and keyboard, man. I feel you there. Like, I think you do need a solution there. I hope they patch something in for you. The thing about playing with a controller is it's not the case at all. Like, with a controller, you can, when you're not in combat, before you start a level or whenever you have time, you can put quick links in. So like you can open up the menu, see all your weapons, and then you can hotkey them to left, up, right, down on the D-pad.
Yeah.
So when you're going into combat, you literally just press up, right, left, or down to switch between whatever weapons that you've assigned to that hotkey, and off you go, kind of thing.
That would be so much easier. But we don't have that. PC. Like we have like the 1, 2, 3, 4 key on our keyboard to hot swap to the weapon we want. And another thing I don't like is like your items, like your inventory and all that. It's not very like responsive when you're trying to like move items in your inventory, or if you want to like store stuff into the other thing. It has a bit of a slight delay to like Resident Evil 1, like spotless. I love it. It is, you like click an item and it's already there and you can just drag it without no hassle. In Alan Wake, you have to, if you want to drag an item, you have to like, you can't move the mouse. So move the mouse to where you want, keep it there, and then hold the button for about a second, and then you can move it. I'm like, it's not very responsive at times, especially, like I said, in middle combat as well, when you're trying to grab an item. It is, I wish they can make that better. Because like RE2s, like RE2 and 3s, like moving is like well responsive, very responsive. So you can move things without no problems. Alan Wake's is a bit clunky at times when you're trying to move items, which is not a good thing when you don't have a pause during your inventory section too. So if they get that fixed, that would always be nice.
Okay, nice. It sounds like for the most part, it's just a couple of nitpicks though, which is good to hear. Did you have any gripes at all with Alan Wake 2, Aaron?
Gripes so far, not really. Like, I mean, I am starting to get to the point where I'm a little bit tedious with the mine place, like as Saga. Alan, like you said, that is good. I like Alan's writer's room. But yeah, I guess it, like, only because I played so much of it now, like, I'm just starting to go, okay, yeah, I know, yeah, we got to put the photo here. Okay, yep, this one goes here. Like, that would be the only thing. But even then, like, I feel like that was good, though, to bring that element into it, because, I mean, like, that's what differentiates it from Resident Evil and, you know, other survival horrors, is the fact that this is, like, supposed to be a psychological crime, detective kind of game kind of thing, which I like, so... That would be about it, kind of thing.
Maybe they just need to rethink a little bit how they implement it, because it just sounds like a really cool idea, but maybe things automatically slot in your mind place when you figure stuff out, so you don't have to go and physically do it yourself. I don't know.
I'll throw you there for a second. There, it does happen at certain parts if you haven't properly like used the mind place to do things. When you go into the mind place to your case board, a lot of time, a good chance that some of them will throw themselves in there automatically if you already kind of set up the case before you did your case stuff. Because I have noticed that a few times in the game when after, like, I go into the case board and I'll be like, oh, and a lot of the items will automatically just go to the place they need to go instead of you choosing where you want to go.
Yep.
That happens. Okay, so cool. It does that, which is pretty cool.
Okay, so it does help you out a little bit. Now, Mume, is it running well on your PC?
Oh, as someone who's got a 4080 card in my PC, it runs like a charm.
Fucking A, yeah, that'll do it.
But then you got take note though. To even run this game on PC, you need like an RTX 20 series minimum to run it. So if you're having like any card below that, you're gonna have a lot of troubles.
Okay.
So my advice, for those who don't have a powerful PC or at least a 40 card in their PC, pick it up on console.
Yeah, I have a 3070 in mine, and it ran fine, like totally fine. You know, but like I said, I was just always worried that it was going to shit the bed. So I'm like, you know what? I don't know how good my luck is here, so let's just go to console now that I'm loving it.
So what I've done is So the DLSS program that you notice to help you run games run smoother and such, they have a thing for only 40 cards, so 40 series cards, where they have a thing called DLSS frame generation, which is a new type of AI they use in their games now, where the idea is that you can, if you have that thing on with a 4080 card. Anything you can, like, you can, once you have that active, checked, you can put everything to max and your frame rate will not drop. And because, like, for some reason, I didn't have that highlighted on my PC for some reason. So I've been playing this game without it. So I haven't been playing it with the ray tracing on or anything like that, which I'm like, that was a bit of a silly thing to do because you're playing a game of ours with light and having that would be good, like a very dynamic lighting system. But so I thought I'll play without it. And then I thought, fuck it, let's find out how to enable this. So I looked online, troubleshoot it. And apparently I had something disabled on Windows itself for me to actually use it. So I enabled it. It's like some hardware GPU something system in the settings somewhere. So after I enabled it, I restarted the game. Like I restarted the game itself. And I think I had to restart my PC too. After I did it, it was highlighted. I checked it. And then, pretty much after I checked it, pretty much all my stats just went, all my settings just went to all to like high and my ray tracing to like max and all that. And I was running the game like, this game is running so smooth because I'm playing on a, almost a 4K monitor because I got an ultra wide monitor right now where you can see on the screen here. Mm. I'm playing it on ultra-wide. I'm playing at 1440p, and the game is running at 144 frames with ray tracing at max.
God damn.
This generation thing works wonders. Because, like, it helps like, take the grunt off most of the hard, like, the graphics off the graphics card, so it gives it more breathing space.
Okay. Oh, nice. How's it running on the Series X, Aaron?
Yeah, really good. Like, really good. I was actually surprised that it ran just as well as the PC kind of thing. I haven't noticed any frame dips or anything at all. I haven't noticed any audio stuttering. No, it runs smooth on console, like, for sure, that I've seen so far anyway.
60 frames?
I believe it's 60 frames on Series X. I haven't seen anything to tell me otherwise, so I believe so. Yeah, 4K 60.
Okay, yeah, usually you can tell. Like, God, if I pick up a 30 frames game, I know immediately, especially if I've come off the back of something that's 60.
There were, like, some reviewers were saying that, yeah, the console versions did have some dips in certain places, but most of the time it's a solid 60.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. Yeah, it says it offers close to a locked 60 frames per second. So, like, I feel like if you're targeting 60 and you have it drop below 60 every now and again, as long as it's not, like, you know, dropping right into the fucking pits of below 30, if it's dropping down to 50, 45, makes a minimal difference to your experience, I think.
Yeah, playing Alan Wake on a Steam Deck.
Oh, yeah, fuck that.
I've seen videos of that. It's horrible.
Man, oh, God. The FOMO is so strong with this one. And it's like, I think it's like $91 to buy it on PSN because it's only available digitally. Remedy have gone the full digital route with this one, which I find a little bit frustrating. It'd be really cool if I could pick this up physically, but no. So, but yeah, God, I'm so tempted to just get some PlayStation credit and hit this up, but
yeah. Yeah. One thing I want to say, Zach, is one thing that I love about what Remedy's done here is, like, for those old gamers that might remember the Lord of the Rings games that came out, which coincided with the movies back in the PS2 Xbox original days, they did a really cool thing in that where they actually showed the movie, like, in a cutscene, like the actual movie, and then it cut into the gameplay, like, directly, like, seamlessly in from the movie kind of thing. So from full motion video into game, and then vice versa, from game into full motion video. And they did that with Quantum Break, which you're playing now as well, kind of where you finish a level and then it goes into, like, full motion video and it's all real actors. This game did such a great job of that too, though, kind of thing. Like, I don't know, for me, when you look at graphics and you go, oh, wow, that cutscene looks super real kind of thing. Well, why not just make it real? Like, we watch TV and shows all the time kind of thing. So let's have full motion video. We can utilize it. It works in the gaming space. But there hasn't been that many games that have actually done it super well, which is why it's not in every single game that we play. But Remedy, my God, nailed it. Like, just I actually prefer watching the full motion video cutscenes than I do the cinematics in the games kind of thing. I'm like, bring Sam Lake out. I want to see him again. This is awesome. Like, it's just incredible. Like, so good. Next level.
Yeah. So that's good to hear because, I don't know, I'm not the biggest fan of FMV, full motion video, in video games. Remedy did it in Control and obviously Quantum Break as well too. They had a whole fucking TV show. And I found in Control that whenever it would happen, if it was someone that we aren't seeing in game around the same time or, like, you know, immediately before or after, it was fine because it's just like, oh, it's just a person on a screen, whatever. But when it was, say, like the main character, I think it was Jesse Faden or something like that her name was, when it would cut to the full motion video of her, it was so jarring because it was like the Uncanny Valley really shows itself because it looks like her, but it's just a little bit off. And it really didn't work for me. It's like, it's not quite the same person. They did it in Borderlands as well too, but in Borderlands it was even more egregious because it's literally a fucking cartoon.
Yeah,
why
like
would
cel-shaded.
You put full motion video into a fucking cartoon? It's just absolute nonsense. So yeah, not the biggest fan of it, but if they've pulled it off, if they've gotten to the point where it can transition, and it, like, obviously it's never going to look exactly the same, but if it looks real enough that it can sort of trick my brain into not noticing quite as much, then yeah, I'm down for that.
Yeah, what I need to correct myself in saying though, Zach, is it's kind of more like, without giving anything away, it's kind of more like parts of the game where, like, you know you're looking at a screen, let's hypothetically say, right, like in game, and then you hold B to go into the screen and then it cuts to the full motion video. So it's not so much like you're walking through the environment and then boom, it's full motion video and you put the controller down. It's more like scenes that are like prompted to kind of go into that and then sit, put the controller down and watch what's going on.
Okay.
Yeah, it beats the Quantum Break ones where you have to like somehow download the actual cutscenes.
Yeah,
70 gigs worth. Because the streaming services aren't up anymore. Holy fucking shit! Now, lads, thanks so much for that. You've given me a really good overview of Alan Wake 2. It's just made the FOMO grow even more. Mume, have you got anything left to say on Alan Wake 2?
Pretty much you already got all I'll say. Like I said, great game. Have a few small gripes, but hopefully they do fix it in the future, because we still have to wait for the DLC that comes out for that game as well, more story content. Without spoiling anything, so, but yeah, everything else is such a, like, it's a brilliant game. Like, I've been waiting for this game for 13 years. I'm like, yes, it's so worth it.
Oh, that's awesome, Mume. Aaron, how about you? Anything left on Alan Wake 2?
No, this was surprising for me because I played the first game and I didn't like it. It just wasn't for me the kind of action running kind of thing, and that turned me off the name Alan Wake. But this is completely different. You don't have to play that first game at all to experience Alan Wake 2 or, you know, tie anything to it. Like, it's just so good for beginners as well.
Oh, unbelievable. Now, Mume, you have finished Alan Wake 2. Do you have a review score for this survival horror?
Definitely a review, but I'm just trying to figure out how I'm gonna mention this. So let's give this game 10 saga mine places out of 10 light bulbs.
Fucking a full score. This year has probably been the one that has the most 10 out of 10s so far. Like, holy fucking shit. I feel like it's the third title this year that someone's given a 10 out of 10 on this show, which is fantastic. It sounds to me like if you're a fan of the survival horror genre, you'd be a fool to miss Alan Wake 2. I am excited about it. I think it's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to be this year or when I'm going to play it, but I am definitely going to get Alan Woke, that is for sure.
Alan Woke.
But that'll do us for News to Reviews for another week. Mume, thank you so much for jumping on and telling us all about Alan Wake. It was absolutely fantastic and getting to hear about Like a Dragon and getting into all the news with us. Yeah, thanks again for joining us.
Always a pleasure. You need to invite me more often, though.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Just keep sliding in those DMs and we'll make it happen, Mume. Don't you fucking worry. It's always a bloody pleasure. And Aaron, it's always a bloody pleasure having you on the show. Thanks for filling in for Lockie again.
I love being here, mate. You get me that phone call, I'll answer.
Oh, yeah. Now, Mume, you do wonderful work in the photography space. Please remind the peeps where they can find it.
So as I mentioned in the start, I do photography in my spare time during conventions, and I do stream from time to time when I've not in, like, if I'm in a good mood, but when I play games. But yeah, you can always find me on like I said, most of my stuff you can easily find on Linktree, where you'll have all my socials, the main ones at least, appear on there. So yeah, Linktree with Mume101 on there. That would be the best way you can track me that way. And if you are in Sydney conventions, you can always shout me on Instagram if you feel like some photos, if you're cosplaying.
Fuck yes, and I definitely recommend that. Mume, the shots you take, Mume, are absolutely fantastic. You're truly, truly a talented individual, that's for sure. And people, if you want to be a talented individual, give to our MoSpace. That's how you do it. If you give money to Movember for a good cause, I will crown you a talented individual and you can put that on your resume, do whatever you want with it. We're still sitting at 500 out of the $1,000 target, which, like, super stoked about that. But we haven't had any donations in the last week. So peeps, if you can afford to, and you want to help out with prostate cancer, testicular cancer, and men's mental health, any donations, no matter how much it is a massive help to us and to, yeah, Movember. But if you can't afford to, feel free to give it a share on your social medias. That's the best way you can support us for free. Aaron. Oh, yeah. Time to put you on the spot, my friend. Any final words of wisdom for us?
No. My final words of wisdom, I know it's kind of the same thing, but I want everyone out there to remember that the console wars are bullshit. Don't listen to anybody. Zach's a PC gamer. I'm an Xbox gamer. I'm pretty sure Moonmade is a PC gamer. We get on just fine here, kind of thing. So you play games wherever you like playing games, and don't worry about what people say.
Oh, yes, that's right. Get Alan woke and take care of yourselves and take care of one another. Yeah.